Okay, so today is, it is Thursday, February 24th, and it's the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting beginning at 9:15 a.m. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. Just to start with, I'll just talk a little bit about sort of where we've been the last month since our last meeting. So a lot of good things going on. I first want to recognize the recent appointments of reappointments of three of our commissioners for another two-year term. Steve Don Carlos was reappointed by the Harris County Mayors and Council Association in August. We also had Cheryl Cruzeau, who's reappointed by the City Council and the City of Houston on February 2nd. And we also have Wendy Montoya Hoonan, who's reappointed by Harris County Commissioners Court like this week. So thanks being accepting the job again. Your pay is going to be doubled.
Yes.
So you know when you multiply zero by any number, it still comes out to zero. Thank you so much for your leadership and service. We know this is a community service project, and we're creating a lot of value, and all of your input is really welcome, and we appreciate that. We had this week a compensation committee meeting. There were four commissioners at that meeting, and I wanted to make sure that we sort of reported out on that. It's really important to make sure that we're compensating our employees at market rates, and in order to attract and retain the best and the brightest for Port Houston. And we know that it's really important to make sure we analyze where our compensation is, and our view at the compensation committee, and I believe held by the overall commission, is that we're competing in a very tight labor environment, and we all know that, with the great resignation or whatever you want to call it. I think it's really a great readjustment. Right? People going, I don't want this job, I'm going to go get another one. And so, with that said, we have to make sure that we are making market adjustments when our positions are out of the market, and we're going to analyze that on a periodic basis, and we did that, and we made some changes and market adjustments up. We also have a very robust merit pay based on their performance, and we implemented a couple of years ago a bonus program or an incentive program. I'm happy to say that last year in 2021, we at Port Houston with the team and Roger and his team hit every major milestone that they could in terms of what their incentives that we had laid out at the beginning of the year. It was probably one of the best, if not best year ever in Port Houston, and we were able to pay out pretty much 100% of what we budgeted, which is roughly on average 4.75% of salaries for each. And this is above and beyond normal merit increases and cost of living type stuff. And I'm really excited about that, proud of that, and I want to thank people to be able to thank Port Houston teams for being able to achieve those goals and get that bonus paid out. Part of the equation on the bonus payout is continuing education and required training. And for our teams that didn't get there on that, next year you understand it's a big part of the equation. And it wasn't just a blanket 4.75% for everybody. It was based on merit and how people achieved their goals in their various departments. I think it's very important to have a competitive compensation strategy. Just because we're a government agency doesn't mean that we shouldn't pay people what market rates are for business and for the competing market that we're in every day. And so we will continue to do that. Project 11 continues to be on schedule. Phase 1A, we plan to start that by the end of March with mechanical dredging. As you recall, we could have started that in December, but we chose to delay the project 90 days so we could have the best dredges in place to be able to hit our above what we had to do from an environmental perspective. So that 90 days is well worth time spent to be able to achieve. Actually, I think Roger, isn't it 48% above the Tier 3? Dredge, plus or minus dredge,
yes.
Emissions. So it's one of the cleanest dredges that's ever been in the Houston Ship Channel, and we're really excited about that. we staff continues to aggressively make the schedule go forward. One other thing that I wanted to talk about, and actually saw this morning when I was getting ready, and I reading my newspapers and trying to stay out of some of the tough stuff going on. But I was reading about there's an announcement of the president and Biden and his teams have highlighted mechanisms to try to solve the supply chain issue that we've been dealing with over the years. And when you think about it, the supply chain issue is about demand increasing dramatically more than we thought it would. A lot of it has to do with just the reopening after COVID and all that, and Americans having more money in their pocket than they ever had as a result of not spending money on vacations and things like that during the lockdown. But when you look at it, and one of the numbers that I thought that was really interesting in that article this morning was that they expect over the next 10 or 12 years that ports will expand by at least 40% in terms of volume. When you think about what's really happening with the supply chain, it really is about high demand that wasn't really anticipated, but it's also many, many years of lack of infrastructure investment. The ports, we know how long it takes to do a project and how expensive it is to do Project 11. I think that's something that we really have to focus on. I know Roger is continuing to focus on that. When you look at if we have 10 years, let's go 10 years out to 2032 from where we are today, and unfortunately it's not that, it goes fast, right? It really does, it's not that long a time. And if you take the average growth rate of our container business from 10 years ago, take that same compounded growth rate, we will double our TEU volume to over 7 million TEUs by 2023, 7,500,000 or 7,050,000. And if you think about where we are, we're at about 3.4 million, 3.5 million TEUs today, something like that.
That was last year, yep.
Last year. And so we really do need to focus on our onshore infrastructure. We're obviously focused on the water side with Project 11. We have, if you add up all the projects that Port Houston has, where the commission has approved them and we're in either design or construction of new wharfs, it's a little over $1 billion. And that doesn't include what happens when we build out the capacity. So we have capacity, Roger, for around 7.5 million to use in Barbers Cut and Bayport.
Well, we're working on that. We in that range between Barbers Cut and Bayport, we expect somewhere 6 to 7 million TEUs, but we'll talk about it a little bit more the way the dwell is.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
On how long containers sit. So it's something that we are going to continue to look at and manage and plan ahead to make sure that we can have the capacity.
Yeah, the bottom line is that if we need to continue to focus on our land side resources and continue to build new wharfs and capacity and that's clearly something that we need to focus on, or that we are focusing on, but we need to continue. Last meeting, we talked about our scheduling, our on-time, on-budget scheduling that the commission's going to be updated on a periodic basis, and that's the key to all of this is to make sure that we, A, have the money, and B, when we do approve a project, it actually gets done on time and on budget. I'm excited about, the team has done a great job trying to focus on where the pinch points are. And when you think about supply chain and construction materials and labor, I mean, everything takes longer and it's more expensive today. So we need to really hone in on making it as efficient as possible. One of the other things I would like to highlight in this meeting is this is Black History Month. And I know most of you know that. It's really important here because it at the port, because it honors the legacy and influence of Black people in our country and region and on our own port team. The thing I think is really interesting about when you start thinking about Black history, it's really about learning and understanding how to get along better, understanding how important the African-American community has been to the U.S. history. It's more than just slavery and racism and things like that. It's actually we would be in a really poorer country today without Black history and the African-Americans that actually have helped us couple of interesting notes. I asked this question, and I wrote Rogers had a number of forums and discussions at Port Houston, lots of stories about interesting African Americans, and one of which, for example, if I ask people in this room, does anyone know who Aaron Jackson is? Raise your hand. You know who Aaron Jackson is? Okay, no one. Aaron Jackson just won the gold medal in the 500 meters speed skating. African American, first African American woman ever to win a gold medal in speed skating. And the interesting part is she's 29 years old, which is unusual because usually these speed skaters are like really young, and 29 in that sport is kind of old on a relative basis. And the other part was interesting was she's from Florida. And how many, last time I heard, I looked, I don't know when it snows in Florida and they have ice rinks, and it's probably well, way underrepresented. She was actually a roller derby woman. And so the idea that and she was also the first woman, U.S. woman to win a gold medal in speed skating in 22 years. So amazing accomplishment. The interesting part, I think, of those kind of icons is that now a lot of African-American kids are thinking, I'm going to go skate, right? And isn't that the whole point of trying to highlight history and create value for folks that ultimately will do well? When you think about the port, the SS Booker T. Washington was the first major U.S. Ocean-going vessel to be named after a black leader. The ship was christened by black opera star Marian Anderson, who sang the Star Spangled Banner when the ship was launched in 1942. The 10,500-ton vessel made its first Atlantic crossing in 1943, and under the command of Captain Hugh Mulzak, the first black captain to command a ship in the U.S. Merchant Marines. He served as captain of this vessel for the next 4 years, leading 22 successful voyages. During that time, he expressed pride for his diverse crew and represented 18 nationalities. The theme of Black History Month this year is health and wellness, and you know that's a major push on Port Houston. The caring for all of our people during the pandemic has been critical, as well as offering mental health and benefits and resources. Finally, specifically for Black health and wellness, Port leadership is working to create a workplace that provides psychological safety to Black employees and other health benefits. Fostering this environment where everybody can bring their whole self to work, where diversity is celebrated, is just one of the things that Port Houston is working on to honor the spirit of Black History Month. We really appreciate it's a great time of year to do that. When you think about the Port Commission, the first black man to be appointed to the Port Commission was Howard J. Middleton, Jr. in 1978. I had the luxury and the honor and privilege of serving with Howard on the Harris County Houston Sports Authority. And at Sports Authority, we kind of sit at the same place, kind of like this group does sometimes. And I was his next-door neighbor on the Sports Authority, so I got to know Howard very well. And we are very honored and fortunate to have the first black woman appointed to the Port Commission sitting with us today, Commissioner Cheryl Cruzeau. So thanks for being here, and thanks for all you do helping Port Houston and helping the community overall. I was in a Greater Houston Partnership meeting last week, and we had some really success in Houston as a region. We got three new headquarters, Fortune 500 headquarters. And one of the companies moved from California, and the reason they moved from California was HP Enterprises. And one of the stated reasons that they had in their press release was they wanted Houston was such a diverse community that they could build their long-term business around diversity and create a more diverse workplace. And they said they couldn't do that in California; it was very difficult to do. And when you think about why it's important for diversity. When you think about diversity, and when I think about our DEI programs and our diversity, and there's lots of data that shows that when you have diverse opinions around a table, you make better decisions. You make better long-term decisions. There's a lot of analysis that shows that if you look at the S&P 500 companies, that when board of directors have more diversity and more women, they have higher rates of return. And that's because of the diverse decision-making process, and I think it's really important to recognize this and celebrate Black History Month. I think it's just something we, as a commission, need to do and as a country need to do as well. So that's it for my comments. Any commissioners, any discussion that you want to have or have any comments? Okay, so let's move on to the approval of the minutes. Okay, they're in the book. Any questions or comments? Not, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. B1, staff reports. Roger, this is your deal.
Yeah, good morning. We're gonna change a little bit on yield some of my time back to the chiefs like we were doing before we went into the pandemic to allow some of the chiefs to talk about not only some of the items on the agenda, but also some highlights of things going on in their area. So I'll be a little bit shorter today. However, I can't resist the fact to emphasize that the business coming across our public docks is busier than ever. Just at a high level in January, the first month of this year, it's in your book, but our overall tonnage is up 19% over last January, so we're off to a good start. You don't have to look too far. You can look out the window and see you should pull a dock still of general cargo, but our container business is busy for ever, and I'll allow Jeff to elaborate on that just in just a minute, which is it brings challenges with containers not, dwelling on the terminal still and not moving through. However, the supply chain has not stopped. It is moving forward. In fact, moving forward faster than ever. As everyone knows, we handled 15% more cargo last year than we did this year in spite of these challenges, and January holds more of the same, and we continue to do that. We have been able to do that. Again, I always want to recognize the fact that, two-thirds of our employees never stopped coming to work and allow that to continue to happen as they do today. In light of that, we've been fortunate enough through this pandemic, mainly in this building where we didn't require our staff to come in. We did a lot of telecommuting. We were very efficient at doing that. We've been trying to phase back into this because, we want to get back to the point where we're growing together, coaching one another, communicating or whatever. We're starting that phase in now, for a couple of days a week. We're going to do that in a safe environment to, we were planning to come back shortly after the first year, and then Omicron kind of spiked up again. But I think it's very important for us to, again, join together as much as we can. Take it from there, see how we move forward. But at least a couple days a week, we're going to be back in here together. And I think being a lot more efficient than we already have been, and very fortunate to have been during the pandemic in a remote work environment. I'm going to turn it back over to Tom. We got a lot of things to discuss today amongst all of the chiefs, but again, we're off and running. We got a lot of measures, goals, and targets that we've established for ourselves and the organization to not only account for this growth immediately, but also to plan for the future. That we expect to see, and infrastructure to keep, and continue to make those investments is what we're thinking about every day. Getting out of the box, looking at non-traditional ways that we can accommodate this cargo and keep the supply chain moving through Houston. So with that, Chairman, I'll turn it back over.
Mr. Chairman, before we get into the other part of the business, I just want to commend Roger and Jeff and Ryan, and I don't want to leave anybody out, but all of the port people who has been responsible for helping us to be able to get this cargo and get it on the docks. You cannot believe how congested it is out there. Cannot believe how they've been moving, making room just to put new cargo in off of these vessels. And I'm telling you, Roger's been hands-on, and Jeff and Ryan, and if I forgot anybody, I apologize.
And a whole host of other people getting the job done.
They have done one tremendous job under some very difficult times, and I just want to recognize them for that.
Absolutely. Well, there's a big, good team, group of people working together to keep freight moving, so thank you. Okay. Any other comments or staff updates? Okay. Good. Yep. All right, great. Well, let's go then to E1, which is appearances, public comment. We have, I think, three folks that have signed up. We have Elu Nasser from the Environmental Defense Fund. Are you there? You go. We see you.
Morning. Can you hear me?
I can. Absolutely.
Thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Thank you so much. Good morning. My name is Elu Nasser. I'm with the Environmental Defense Fund, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning. We were glad to learn in December of the release of the updated CASP and the new GMEI, and we'll be submitting more detailed written comments later. I just wanted to provide some high-level comments on those two documents. First, I wanted to commend the port, especially Trey Campbell and Ken Gathright and Kelly Gallagher, for the exceptional work done on the GMEI. It provides really meaningful information about the 2019 baseline for port emissions activities. Secondly, with respect to the CASP, we feel that it still needs some major improvements. The emission goals need to be substantially more challenging. The goals to reduce NOx emissions by 4% do not go far enough to make progress on air quality, and especially when we're thinking about doubling capacity at the port, you know, we need to be making more aggressive targets on that front. The CASP also lacks both mention of greenhouse gases as well as any meaningful goals to reduce them. And we found that the GMEI provides some very good data, and we are hopeful that that information will be integrated into the CASP. We believe that Port Houston, in order for you to continue to stay competitive in this changing global market, that consideration of climate impacts must be integrated into your daily operations, especially into the climate plans and programs. Secondly, there's no identified budget that we can see within Port Houston's budget for the CASP. We strongly encourage a specific earmark equal to at least 5% of the total budget for the CASP, the SAT, and any other emission reduction programs. We'd like to explore with Port Houston opportunities to develop zero emission supply chain. Now, especially with yesterday's announcement from the administration of the $450 million of port infrastructure funding, and that funding calls upon applicants, I'm certain you all are aware, to explore ways to, you know, both improve goods movement, but also looking to strengthen resilience, reduce emissions, and advance environmental justice. Specifically, Walmart, one of your largest customers, has stated that their goals are to achieve zero emissions across their global operations by 2040. And so in order for them to be competitive, for you to be competitive for federal funding, and for also for you to support your customers in achieving their emissions goals, it's really important that you make meaningful plans to create this zero emission supply chain. And we think that Port Houston is better positioned than many of the California ports for a zero emission supply chain initiative. For example, the route from the port to Baytown is only 10 miles, while the route from the Los Angeles ports to the Inland Empire, where many of their warehouses are, it's over 100 miles. And so in this example, integrating zero emissions drayage trucks, for example, it would be clearly much easier and less expensive here in Texas than in California. And furthermore, Peterbilt and Navistar are now building trucks here in Texas, electric trucks here in Texas. So this makes it a win-win for the Texas economy. So it's our desire to see that Port Houston is a leader in the climate and racial equity space, and we remain available to offer our expertise and partnership, especially in pursuing funding to seek programs like this. Thank you so much.
We appreciate your comments, and one of the things that we have been talking about with Port Houston management and with the commission is this year we will be coming out with a path and a plan for taking Port Houston to zero carbon, and we will have specific goals that we'll put in, and we hope that to work with you and with others in the community
to make sure that, you know, that we're all on the same page with that. So we will be doing a lot more going forward in terms of that path and publishing the data that we have. We'll be updating our reports annually and reporting against those targets. So that is coming. It will be happening this year, and we appreciate your support in helping us get there. Okay, any commissioners, any comments or questions? Okay. Our next speaker is Reverend James Caldwell of the Coalition of Community Organizations. Reverend Caldwell, are you on? Let's see here.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. Thank we you. Can hear you. Can you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, good morning to all. First of all, I want to thank the chair.
We're having some trouble hearing you. If you're on a phone or can you go ahead? Let's see if we can get a better connection.
Opportunity to speak this morning, and
unfortunately, we're getting like every other word garbled, so we really can't hear you. I'll tell you what, is there a way for you to connect in a different device or hang up and connect again, and then we'll, what I'll do is go to the next speaker and then give you some time.
I am on my phone.
Okay.
But first of all, I'm going to
tell you what,
try to get this in as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you go ahead? I'm going to go to the next speaker.
First of all, I'd like to just share. I will support it.
Okay, go ahead now.
It's really important to integrate diversity, equity, and inclusion. Earlier, we're going to start right now. All right. That will be fine. Okay.
Unfortunately, technology is not working today for you.
Continuing for that.
I'll tell you what, we're going to go to the next speaker, and then why don't you hang up and reconnect, and hopefully that will improve your connection. And we'll go ahead and go to the next speaker, Elizabeth Slumbaugh, from the Houston Healthy Poor Communities Coalition and the Public Citizen. So Elizabeth, go ahead, and then we'll hopefully get Reverend Caldwell back in a minute.
Yes, hi, good morning, everyone. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak at today's meeting. Yes, my name is Elizabeth Slomba. I am an organizer for Public Citizen, a public interest organization that is also a part of the Houston Healthy Poor Communities Coalition. As a resident of East Harris County, I am also speaking on behalf of community to express concerns regarding the newly announced transition of dredging contract responsibilities from the Port of Houston to the Army Corps of Engineers. Our concerns lie within the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers has not agreed to adopt the same standards that Port Houston recently adopted to reduce emissions and ensure cleaner dredging vehicles to reduce the associated health risks with pollution in neighboring communities. Segments 4, 5, and 6 of Project 11 will have health packs on environmental justice communities who are already bearing the burden of pollution. It is taking a toll on people's health. We urge you, the Port, to embrace your influential role as a leader. As the non-federal sponsor of the Ship Channel, you should urge the Army Corps of Engineers to adopt the same standards in order to protect local communities and the environment. And thank you.
Okay, great. Appreciate your concerns. We will have community meetings with the Corps of Engineers on those segments. So we hear you, and we hopefully will be able to work with the community and the Corps to bring the dredging contracts in the same place that we are. But you know, the federal regulations tend to be more complicated than if the Port manage the contracts, but we will definitely bring folks together and have these debates face to face. So thank you for your input. Let's go back to Reverend Caldwell. Are you back there?
Yes, sir, I am, and I.
Oh, you're much better now. Go ahead.
Okay. That's great. I'm gonna try to get this in
Well, you were for a minute.
With possible. Just like the show on PCC, of course, and Coco, you know, I just want to know if it supports intention to work. Have that work, yeah, not only solely focused within the ports operation.
We're still having very difficulty understanding what you're saying because of the connection. So maybe what we can do, is there another device you can hook onto and we'll get back to you in a few minutes?
Hears
you. Yeah.
You might want to telephone as opposed to doing it online.
You could use the telephone as opposed to doing it online.
Telephone number.
Yeah, but he's still going through this.
Oh, I see. Not sure how we do that. How does he do that? Who's what number does he call?
What's his number? Do we know?
No.
The number on the table.
He doesn't. Because we're already hooked up with that. Well, I'll tell you what, we will have to. Yeah, we're getting like every other word.
He can't hear you.
All right, so, you know, unfortunately, we're going to have to move on to the meeting, and if you can maybe send an email, we can read it next time. Or unfortunately, technology sometimes is challenging, as you know. So. I appreciate that. Any other public comments, edits, sir? Okay, good. All right, well, we're going to move on then to the executive section. So staff report, Tom, are you going to do this?
We don't have a staff report for executive, but F1, Tim is going to present that. And
commissioners, what we've decided to do now is get our chiefs to present the items rather than Tom just going through them. Yep. We can get them back in a rhythm of discussing things directly with the commission, so you can ask them directly. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, commissioners. F1 on the agenda this morning is to obtain commission authorization to hire Ms. Shannon Williams as a Port Authority Chief Audit Executive. As you remember, on January 25th, in both the audit committees and the full Port Commission, there was deliberation on this matter. The outcome was to give Roger the authority to hire Ms. Williams. So today is simply to ratify those actions and seek commission approval to hire Ms. Williams, who is with us today, by the way. Mr. Shannon, if I haven't had an opportunity to introduce you.
Good morning again to everyone, and I just want to thank you all for the opportunity, and I look forward to working with you all here very soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, is there a motion?
So moved.
Any questions or comments? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so then I'll handle F2, which is to enter into an industrial district agreement with the City of Morgan's Point. Basically, what this is a similar to what we did with the City of Pasadena at Bayport. The City of Morgan's Point will de-annex 445 acres of Barber's Cut, which is the extent of it, and for that de-annexation for 15 years, which is a state statute limitation, we can't go more than 15 years, we are going to pay them a fee for, and the fee is similar, it is exactly the same amount as we did with Pasadena. So when you take all of those fees up, it comes to, we would owe them about $3 million for this de-annexation. However, they have requested that we sell them some property that is on the south side of Barber's Cut Boulevard, which by a long-standing agreement, we can't do operations on the south side of Barber's Cut Boulevard anyway. So this makes sense for us, and it also makes sense for them because they want to build a road for their residents so that their residents won't have to go down to the cul-de-sac on Barber's Club Boulevard to get back into the neighborhood. So it will also clean up the water agreement we've had with them for a long time that needs some cleaning up. We will continue to get them their 2% of the sales tax that we collect on the rental of the container cranes. We'll just do it as an in lieu of taxes rather than send it to the state and then the state send it back to them. Again, exactly how we do it with Bayport. And then the final big piece is we will be coming back to you at some point in the future because we are going to plant bamboo or something along Barber's Cup Boulevard to try to block out as much of the terminal as we can from Barber's Cup Boulevard. So it's a win-win. We've had a number of conversations. Eric's done all the work. We have had a number of conversations with Morgan's Point, and they're pleased with this deal. And so what will happen is we'll approve it. Then from that approval, they'll take it to their city council for improvement on their side, and then we'll go forward with it. So I ask for the approval to enter into an IDA with the city of Morgan's Point.
So moved.
Question. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be responsible for potholes? That's always been a problem down there.
Potholes on Barber's Cup Boulevard?
Yeah.
That's a county road. Yeah,
that's county.
Which means we'll see where that goes, but
it is a county road. But since Barber's Cup Boulevard was redone, 10 years ago now or whatever, still in good.
Any other questions? If not, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right, next item G, we're going to have Maxine Buckles come up, our Chief Business Equity Officer. Maxine, good to see you.
Good.
I'm glad they hired your replacement.
Yes.
Welcome.
The
honor is
officially
passed. There you go.
She seems really happy.
She only has one job.
Yes, it's hard to bounce to Bob at the same time. Absolutely. I want to address item G1, and that is to request the approval of a professional service contract with IMC Culture. As you recall, IMC was hired last year to assist the DEI action team with developing a DEI action plan. That effort is winding up now, so we are moving into the implementation phase, and we feel that it's important to maintain the momentum with IMC and hire them again to assist us with the implementation phase, which includes leadership development, overcoming bias and leadership support, as an example, communication initiatives, and several other initiatives that we have on the recommendation. So with that, I'd like to ask for your approval of approving item G1.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments?
Yeah, is this going to be 250 in the other 2 years, or is this the 257,500? Is that for 1 year?
That is for 1 year.
So we're really looking at a $700,000 deal to get this done, right?
Well, we have 2 1-year options, so we'll reevaluate in another year as to what services we'll need them to continue.
If there's a recommendation to extend beyond to another year,
we'll come back to the commission.
For that, the intention is to keep, to get the implementation going. We're onboarding some staff.
How long does it take to get this done?
Well, culture is hard to change, so it takes anywhere from 3 to 5 years to really make a difference, and it could take longer than that depending on, how the organization responds and reacts to the effort that we're implementing. So we envision this to be at least a 5-year effort.
DEI is a journey, not a destination.
Do it.
DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, is a journey.
Yeah.
Not a destination.
Mm-hmm.
And
I thought that when it came up and I talked about it, nobody paid attention to it then. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we're going to go to commercial. John Mosley, our Chief Commercial Officer, is up. John, good to see you.
Good to see you, Chairman. Commissioners, good morning.
I have pleased to present two requests on behalf of the Forest Commercial Division today. I have to draw your attention specifically to H1, which is a request for award of contract for $340,000 to locally owned, small, woman-owned business, Love Advertising, to design, construct, and launch a new website for the port. The last time that we had launched our website was back in 2016, and I think we all know that technology has changed, and a lot of the operability of the website, the functionalities have changed in this time. We also have some cybersecurity concerns that have also been addressed in the new design of the website. So, that said, I'd also like to remind you that 2 years ago, when we started looking at our new strategic plan, one of the areas which we found needed improvement was our communication with our external partners and stakeholders, be it our customers, be it our industry partners along the Houston Ship Channel, the communities that where we live and work and operate around our facilities. And we've done a remarkable job. Just in the last 2 years, we've had nearly 4 million visitors to our website, and it's a tremendous source to be able to provide information to all our different partners and stakeholders. So with that, I'd like to make a request for your approval to award $340,000 contract to Love Advertising to design, construct our new website.
I have a question.
So move. You need a motion first.
I'll second too. Very much second. Go ahead.
And approve our.
What was the question?
Yeah.
Just a question. Just looking at the various respondents and the extreme ranging the bids. How you might explain that? Someone has a bid at $48,000 and a high bid of close to $800,000. Inexperience of the low bidder, not understanding the scope of the project, or
yes, there was some bidders. Well, we had a cross-functional team that included, business equity. We had team members from procurement, from cyber IT group, and from marketing, of course, and we had 269 potential plan holders, 13 proposers, and at the end of the day, we went into four presentations, and, the pricing was all over the place, that's true, but we also found that there were added services and things that some of the proposers didn't include, some major charges, and then just the quality and the type of work that we're looking for to have a truly modern, state-of-the-art communications platform. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, just Tom reminded me that I'll also need to have approval for the second bidder in case we don't.
No.
There's two items, right? H1 and H2.
Why don't we take H1 since we have a motion and a second already? Any other questions on H?
I was just going to say, I know Eric, Roger, Matthew, we might have heard, I know y'all too, and then later on we talked about when it comes to getting vendors and trying to make it easier, we push forward trying to reach our goal on SMWBE. Could this be the time when we think about, I know we've been talking about it for a while now, where we do a framework for where a vendor can go in, they can put their certifications so that we can start creating a database in which to search, or when we have a big contractor that's looking for a sub, where we can have that database. I don't know all of what this is going to entail, but it seems like it would be a perfect time to think about what we've been talking about since last year and try to make sure we get some kind of implementation on that. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? If not, all
fair to say. I'd like to have Lattice's update the website.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We ran these good work.
Great. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And now let's go to number two.
H2 is a routine extension of an existing tenant.
Okay.
Motion.
Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. No items in finance. Let's go to infrastructure. Rich Burns, our chief infrastructure officer.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. There's eight items on the agenda.
Right before you even get started, we are going to pull J8 from the agenda.
Okay.
So we're only talking about J1 through J7 when we get to the...
Just because we don't have to do it anymore, because you figured that out?
Yeah, there's agreement that it is not going to affect PLO.
Gotcha, okay.
Okay, so the other seven, I'd like to highlight J4 and J5 together, which are design contracts for the wharves and the yards rehabilitation at Barber's Cut. This is part of a $218 million total rehabilitation program at Barber's Cut, which is supported by a $79 million infra grant. So this is a long-term, four-year program. We'll be starting construction. The design has been moved in phases, and we're going to start construction of the wharves in first quarter of next year, and the rehabilitation of the yards starting in Q2 of this year. And they'll both be finished by 2027. These are installments on the design contracts. We've come to you before in 20 and 21 and 22 because we're encumbering the money as we go through fiscal years. So the total amount is greater than that, but we've kind of made it known as we've had this discussion with the commission. And I'll highlight number six as well, which is a $5 million agreement to piggyback on the Army Corps' maintenance of the ship channel up here in the turning basin. Basically, when they bring their dredges up to the ship channel, we piggyback on that contract to have our docks and wharves and our responsibilities taken care of. So approving this amount ahead of time keeps us on schedule when they actually start their project, which should be around Q3, Q4 this year. There will be some associated tipping fees with that volume when we put it into the placement areas, which we think is about $2.6 million. But we're not asking for approval on that yet. In fact, the way this works is we deal with operations at the core for this maintenance contract, and then we deal with real estate at the core for the tipping fees, and they haven't asked us yet. So, but that is associated with the cost. And this is similar to the last contract that we did, which was 3 years ago. I'll take any questions.
Okay. Let's get a motion for items J1 through J7.
So moved.
Second. And a second. Any questions or comments?
What needs to be done? Rehabilitation of those docks at Barber's Cut. What exactly do we have to be rehabilitated?
We're strengthening the yards, for example, for the stacked operations that we do now. In 1977, when they were built, we had lots of chassis operations and so forth. And then the wharves are being rehabilitated. We rehabilitated wharf two before, and they just need to be strengthened from bigger cranes.
Yeah, remember the crane rail at Barber's Cut are 50 feet, and it's going to 100. So everything's got to be redone just because of that.
So we have
to already done. Yeah, one, two, three.
One, two, and three have already been rehabilitated, and four will be done. So I knew we were taking the three cranes from Bayport. Do we have to take out the old concrete and re-pour? Is it the extent of that? I'm assuming
yeah,
we have to.
It's a pretty extensive process, and I can show you some pictures. Basically, we have to re-drill a bigger and stronger piers. And so you take off the deck, you go underneath and drill and produce. You go from 30-inch piers to, I think, 48-inch piers or something like that.
Sounds expensive.
And this isn't the end of Barber's Cut. There's additional properties that aren't in this $218 million program that will be coming. And, of course, we'll be asking for more grant money to support that program, too.
So this is probably basically because of the additional weight.
Additional weight on the wharves and higher stacks on the yards.
Didn't each wharf about 30 million? No, it was.
I think about twice that.
I'll take your bid.
Yeah, there you go. Any other questions? Do you have a question, Mr. Meese? No?
Got an answer.
Okay, perfect.
Do we know what the, what's the rate per cubic yard for the maintenance dredge? Has that been calculated?
Oh, it varies by location and the distance to the placement area. And I think the tipping fees are about $4.50, and I think the maintenance fees are about $10. But as I said, it varies depending on if you're out in the channel or not.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Opposed. J 1 through 7 passes. Item J, we have Jeff Davis, our Chief Port Operations Officer.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. I know by now you all are probably missing Tom's warm personality. I'll try to aspire to reach that bar this morning. But before we get to the agenda, we'll touch on a couple of operational items. The Chairman opened with remarks about how unprecedented 2021 was. We're certainly off and running in 2022. The container volumes, total TUs were up in January 27%. Loads were up 11%. Loads are where really the rubber meets the road for us. TUs were 323,000 TUs were handled in January, and that's almost 70,000 more than handled last January. On the general cargo side, you look out this window here, and you'll see about a dozen ships working here. We've general cargo is up 125% led by steel, plywood, door skins, dry bulk, such as cement, and granite the elevator. So we are off and running. And but these unprecedented volumes we haven't accomplished them without challenges. The general cargo facility, they're averaging 19 to 24 ships every day. With a dozen ships right here in January. And another 3 to 6 intermittently waiting at anchor to get up to these facilities. The container facilities, every day. Today we have 12 ships sitting at the bar waiting to come up. And there are some 5 to 6 that are working every day around the clock. So when you think about 30 ships working every day and another 15, our port is just unprecedented pressure that we're working under. And some of the things that go along with that, gate volumes at the container terminals, we set a record day the other day with in excess of 14,000 transactions. The old record was barely over 13,000, so we didn't just creep by it, we leapt past it. But Barber's Cut by itself, I bet every other day it seems to set a gate for volume. So it's been strong growth. What are we doing to try to accommodate some of that? We started a 6 o'clock new gate hour at the container terminals in February. We were working from 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening. We worked with the labor. We were able to come up with a good program to be able to open at 6 o'clock. And the idea is certainly to smooth out some of the hours at the container facility as we handle it. But trucking capacity is really in harm's way right now. And we see at the end of the day, the moves start tapering off, and it's because the drivers are reluctant to start a transaction that they're not going to finish. So we're hopeful that the 6 o'clock hour affords the trucking community greater efficiencies. And we're already doing 60% of a normal hour at 6 o'clock in the morning, so we're already feeling good about the success there.
Let me ask you a real quick question.
Sure.
So the hours are 6 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Yes,
at both Bayport and Barber's Cut?
And we close the end gate at 6 p.m., and it gives us an hour to clean up the container yard and bring everybody back out. So the trucker needs to be there by 6, but the facility actually shuts at 7. So we've added the 6 o'clock hour.
The reason I'm asking, Chambers County is working with TxDOT on a master transportation plan because of the unbelievable volume of trucks that are now coming in and out and going to Chambers County. And so they're very interested in the gate hours. And if we change them in the future, if we could, you let me know so I can let them know, or we'll get you contacts to let them know.
We're evaluating a Saturday gate now. I don't know that we can continue to get to that 7 million number that we were talking about this morning, working 8 to 5, for lack of a better term. We need to spread these hours out for the roadway, for the community, our own ability to perform and those sorts of things. So, but we are looking at it Saturday now. Problem with Saturday, we've never had a lot of success with Saturdays. We're doing 60,000 gate moves a week, and if we get a 1,000 on Saturday, we're happy we had that much participation, but it's not really moving the needle on those 60,000 moves. So,
1,000 is how many we do in an hour during normal
right.
day, right?
It's we're doing 1,000. You know, if you take 12 hours and we did 14,000, you know, that was a big day for us. But we're doing 12,000-13,000 every day. It's 1,000 an hour. Don't necessarily come at, you know, some hours are greater than others, but it'd be nice if it was that smooth. But that's an overall average.
But right now it's just Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday.
Do any of the forts have a second shift that they work overnight?
You know, some forts do, and we have tried that. We tried last year during the peak. We provided hours till 11 o'clock at night, and they just were not utilized. I talk about those 12,000-13,000 a day, and we get several hundred at night. It doesn't really move the needle, and we're just kind of – we're wasting our resources, our labor, exhausting our labor and doing those kind of things. So we killed it back. And we've always said we'll provide any hour that anybody's willing to work. And we've tried various versions of nighttime and Saturdays. The 6 o'clock hour is something we've never tried before, but it's been successful. And it's just been expensive. 3 weeks, man, I'm going to like where it is.
Do you pay your shifts or are you paying overtime?
We pay overtime.
We have, you know, the assets that we have for gate capacity, the entry and exit gate facilities, the cranes that we have to service the road. We'd love to use those fixed assets more clock hours of the day. And we, as Jeff said, we would try that. The challenge is always, you know, there's a limitation on how many hours a truck driver can drive in a week. So it's not, you know, if we're open 24 hours, there's not enough truck drivers to fill that volume to stay open. But
the federal law bans overtime for truck drivers.
Yeah,
he gets 14 hours a day, and they have electronic monitoring. Right. It's not the volunteer. It's not a volunteer.
I just thought that there was a way in terms of different shifts.
And I think it's human nature, too. I don't want to work at night, right?
Well, and it's also they have to have a place to pick up or a place to go during the day and not at night. So it's a slowly changing, evolving culture that's going to get us there of the way we do business. But, you know, today, you know, you think about the trucker. Trucker wants to be at home at night, too, right? And just as Rick said. So, but we're available. We make ourselves available to extend those hours or whatever, and we tried it for a long time, and we'll continue to do whatever. I mean, open an extra hour. That was directly as a request from some export customers, probably from Chambers County, and you know, in conjunction with those roads over there, we're certainly engaged in what opportunities our freight moved there.
They absolutely initiated.
So they initiate that to be able to use that extra hour in the morning before there's too much traffic on the existing roadway. So we're very in tune with the people in West Chambers County, and we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, the good news is that the segment of the Grand Parkway is nearly finished that will basically run the really streamline it in Harris and Chambers County over to the logistics area.
And, Commissioner, they've got a pilot project, too, where they're going to allow, you know, typically overweight containers can't run on a toll road.
Yeah.
But they've made an exception for that because these resin boxes are overweight to allow for certain hours of the day to allow those trucks to run on the tollway to get to and from the container terminal. So a lot of efforts going, working with the shippers of cargo to help, you know, make a more efficient process.
Next item to kind of highlight was arrival of the three new shore cranes that arrived at Bayport, I think about 2 weeks ago. Commissioner Don Carlos, thank you for coming out and joining us. You know, we used to have marching bands and buffets and everything every time. Cranes got some monotonous coming in and out. They show up and we all blow them and put them to work. But These three cranes are particularly interesting. They match what the capacity of a ship in Project 11 will provide us in a few years. So we're starting to get, we've got cranes in place today that match 14,000 TEU ship. But Project 11 is going to be bringing us a slightly bigger ship. And so the new standard for cranes will be that 15,000 TEU ship. And that was the first set of them. And we're moving the shorter, smaller cranes by barge. We're taking three cranes from Bayport and moving them to Barber's Cut. The barge is due March 7th, somewhere around in there, and it'll take a couple of weeks to ship those three cranes over to Barber's Cut. Barber's Cut has a smaller channel today. It facilitates a little smaller ships from Bayport, so we're really excited about getting these larger cranes to accommodate the bigger ships at Bayport and help us manage some of those queues of ships that are out there, because we have to stagger those ships up to get those cranes. And that's going to help us.
And these cranes are
enormous. 158 foot under the spread of bar, and our previous cranes were 144 foot under the spread of bar. They reach out to the very edge of the channel. So but they will accommodate a 15,000 TEU ship, and they are large.
Which a 15,000 TEU ship is 22 containers wide.
It's 168 foot wide and 1,200 feet long, and today we have an 1,100 foot ship typically reside in an 18 wide type format, so 17-18 wide. So it's a big leap, but the day that Project 11 is complete, those ships will be available to us, and we have to be prepared. And this is we've been making preps for that, but we've increased the size of this crane slightly, and we had the largest crane on order for the U.S. until I think Savannah went past it like a foot or something. I think it's intentional.
So, Jim, let me ask you. Did you say the cranes, these new three cranes, only go 18 wide?
No, the ship that we see today is
20. Oh, 18, yeah.
The 1,100-foot ship, the 1,100-foot length overall ship that we see today, they're 17 and 18 wide. But
right.
When we get to that 14 and 15,000 TEU ship,
they'll
that's
20 wide.
So how do you figure that out?
Cutting Bayport, and we have four ship store Coney cranes as well, but I believe the last commission PO has been exhausted, and it's time to replenish this one for parts that we badly need to keep those cranes on. I would also like to highlight number four, K4. I want a 3-year contract, ABB, the sole source provider for quarterly inspection services for motor control drives and support services for the war cranes and Barber's Cut and Bayport. It's not all, it's $345,850. It's not for all the cranes. We have 18 of the ZPMCs. Their drives, their electronic components, the brains of the operation are provided by ABB into those ZPMC cranes, and this is to provide for regular inspections of those services because it's a vital link to keeping those cranes alive and operating. And unless there are any questions, I'd ask for your approval for items K1 to K5.
So moved.
Second.
Any other questions, comments?
Very quick question. No, I'll leave you alone, I promise. On the Kona Cranes contract, since it is captive partially, we just about have to deal with them. Have we given any thought to locking them in for longer than 2 years on their charges for service and parts? I'm concerned with the inflation, which seems to be going through everything, about us doing a 2-year contract versus a 3 that we have on other companies. Have we thought about it, or they insist on 2 years?
Roger, you asked me.
No, I'm just saying it's something I don't know if we've thought about. Typically, we think about contracts that we competitively bid, you know, in 2-year increments or whatever. I mean, these are captive replacement parts. I don't know if they'll lock in more than 2 years on their pricing or whatever.
Are they locking in prices here all over, or just?
Yes, okay. It's locked
so,
2 years.
I think that's a tough left,
yeah,
so to speak. Everyone has the same, inflation issues. I mean, when we're doing construction contracts, you just can't get anybody to lock anything in for more than a few months. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, if not, we'll take the vote on K1 through 5. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Votes?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I want to recognize the maintenance department head here, and also when I was commending everybody else a while ago, I got to say the maintenance department has done an excellent job trying to keep up with all of the activities.
You're here.
All of that is well deserved recognition.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to L, people. We have Jessica Shaver, our Chief People Officer. Jessica.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning. Before moving on to consideration of item L1, I'd like to provide a couple of updates today regarding some of our important community initiatives as it relates to item L1. As you know, Port Houston is committed to strengthening partnerships with surrounding communities and stakeholders and exploring opportunities to work closely with them as a responsible neighbor. Port Authority is especially interested in supporting programs or services that align with our current outreach priorities, and one of those is parks and green spaces in targeted neighborhoods that surround our port facilities or the Houston Ship Channel. So last year, the Port Commission approved a multi-year program and funding for the development and improvement of parks and green spaces in Houston and in East Harris County, with through 2 separate programs totaling $2 million. So I'd like to provide a brief status update on these programs along with a request for project funding. Moving on to this first slide. So for potential improvements in East Harris County, after receiving guidance from the commission, from some of the commissioners, members of the community relations team and other staff have reached out to targeted communities near Port Houston facilities and requested proposals for projects that align with this program and that are ready to be implemented. We are currently in active discussions on the following projects, and we'll bring forth these programs and projects for approval as they come up. So the ones that we are currently in discussion on include public trail improvements in Galena Park, a community pavilion in Shore Acres, and park improvements in Channel 2. So today, moving on to the next slide, staff is requesting that Port Commission be authorized funding for the improvement of public trails in the city of Galena Park, in a total amount not to exceed $145,000. The City of Galena Park, which joins Port Houston's Woodhouse Terminal and Industrial Park East facility have proposed a project to provide lighting improvements along the public walking trail on Main Street. As you'll recall, we provided some funding for that sidewalk project a couple years ago. So this aligns with that and our and public safety initiatives with that. Moving up to the next slide, you can see some photos of what this will be looking like along with where those improvements will be. So it's right along our dance site, and again, in a community that is right adjacent to our facilities. So before moving on to approval for that, I just wanted to also provide an update of where we are on the Houston project as well. So moving on to the next slide. So we, as you'll recall, we signed the MOU in September with the Houston Parks Board. This is also another $1 million contribution that we have made, which will be a multi-year program. We have paid the first installment of $250,000, and our sponsorship will specifically target two different parks that are in the vicinity of parking facilities, which include the Dalgo Park, which is just right up the channel from here, along with the Oak Meadows Park, which is directly across from our Rosa Allen dance site. So again, two that are neighboring communities to some of our to our facilities, so trying to make that connection with our investment efforts. So we are excited to work with the community listening sessions at the end of 2021 as they hope to redesign some of those programs, and we are participating actively in those discussions. One final thing before approval, want to have a final note on our another effort with regarding to community efforts. We're excited to announce that we have opened our 2022 community grants program. This program focuses on investing resources in meaningful programs or projects that support and enhance local communities. We have a budget of $325,000 this year, so we're excited to expand that program. And hoping to create better outcomes in the communities that are neighboring facilities. So we've been working hard to make sure our stakeholders and the neighboring communities receive information about this year's program and they have all the details needed to apply. We've already held two virtual grant workshops to provide applicants the chance to learn more. And just as a reminder that the first upcoming deadline of March 4th is the due date for all letters of interest. So anybody that qualifies for that, we encourage people to get those submissions in and move through that process.
I've had this actual information distributed to all the cities in Harris County through the Mayor and Council Association. I have sent all the members,
right,
and I announced it at the last meeting also. So
thank you.
Word should be out.
Okay. Yes.
A question about the Houston. I mean, I see the MOU was signed in September.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened since September?
So since then, they started holding the listening sessions. Those were held for the two different parks. They held community outreach and listening sessions. Those were held right before the winter holiday. That will go into some of their designs for their plans. So they're really trying to get that input from the communities of what they want those to be incorporated into those parks.
Do we have a motion yet?
Not yet.
Well, should we have it?
Sure. Let's have a motion to approve number one.
Motion.
Sorry. Okay. Great. Now let's talk.
I have a question, Beth.
Okay.
I want to be real sure. This is not the money's not coming out of that $1 million that we set aside for East Harris County, is it?
Not for Houston. That's
no. I'm not talking about Houston. I'm talking about the $1 million that we set aside to build the parks in East Harris County.
That's separate money. That's being spent.
This is not a
go
park.
Back to that.
This is not a park. I'm not against the program, but I don't want the money taken out of the park thing that we approved in here to put lighting out there.
That's
a separate thing, huh?
That's the first item she was talking about, the three.
You go back to
yeah,
the
I know. It's
slide.
One, isn't it?
This is
L1.
It's one agenda item, but there were three different communities that we were considering, Galena Park, Shore Acres, and Channel View.
Okay, but Galena Park that you're doing is not a park. It's lighting down Main Street and all that, which I think is a great program. But it shouldn't be coming out of the park money that we set aside or taken out of the $1 million that we set aside in Houston's park money. Now, that was set aside for a specific purpose, and it wasn't for putting lighting, and I think it's a great project, and I think it's a needed project, but I do not want it coming out of the $1 million we set aside to try to help the park.
Well,
that seems to me what we're doing here.
We were
under the impression from the discussion that we had that that was a project that we were going to use for the $1 million.
No, we had a discussion, and I said in it, and at that point in time, I said, as long as it's used for a park, and told them that I wasn't for it, told the two ladies was that, and she said, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it some other way. Now it's right back.
But isn't it a running track around the dredge placement?
It goes from main lighting from Main Street and everything else. It's a lighting basic program, is it not?
It's lighting for...
They had two different projects that they were looking at the time, and this is the one that was their highest priority project. The other one was a exercise area at an adjacent park.
I don't disagree with it. It's a high priority. It should be done, but not out of my park money. They're not taking out of Houston's park money. I don't think you'd want that either. It was set aside for a specific purpose, and this is not one of the purposes. Now, there's nothing wrong. In fact, I'll make a motion that we pay for it and get it out of some other fund. Who's ever wants to put it up? But somewhere down the line, we got two of the parks, and they're both parks, but this is not a park, and it wasn't set aside for lighting, and that's my position with it.
Well, this motion doesn't specifically take it out of $1 million. So what I would suggest is that we approve the expenditure, and then let's have a separate discussion in the community relations meeting.
Agreed.
To be able to talk about where the money comes from, and then we can have a broader discussion with the rest of the commission there.
So bottom line is, it doesn't matter.
Well, we can defer.
We can defer.
It's been an issue for a long time, Roy, that they've been trying to get that.
I would rather not defer that. I mean, I think we can do it whether it comes out of $1 million or not, right? Because we told them we would.
Yes.
And what I would suggest is we approve this item, and we don't take it out of $1 million. It doesn't really say where we're going to take this money out of. We're just going to approve the money, and then let's take it back to the community relations group where we can all debate in that forum how we spend that money, okay? And if we need to appropriate it from another bucket and not $1 million, then and the committee agrees with that, then I'm fine with that.
I agree.
Can we just make an amendment to this? To this motion that the $1 million park money will not be used?
To pay for this project.
I mean...
this motion doesn't say it comes out of...
No, I understand. Park, I know that Roy's concerned that...
No, I get it. And I think we need a broader discussion in that committee, right? So, I mean, you can amend it to say that.
All I'm trying to do is get it over with now, instead of having to go back and talk about it again.
But the committee is back to me because one of the other projects is for a pavilion,
right?
Which also wouldn't fit in that. And those are all projects discussed as part of the $1 million. So there does have to be a discussion at a committee meeting.
Right.
Sorry, versus a community pavilion.
Right. What I would like to do, I'll take an amendment to this motion that says that basically says that this doesn't come out of the million, subject to that committee meeting.
So moved.
That's it.
Meeting it was set aside for parks and
okay. So we have an amended. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I just want to make sure I understand it because I want to vote knowing all the facts. So the issue is that it's the lighting that is surrounding a track. And the track is not classified as a park.
It's an outdoor exercise park, right?
That's separate. They have two different programs that they propose.
It's like a levee around, I think, around that dredge placement site, and then they use it for a running track, but it's in bad shape. There's potholes, and people fall.
What this is we work for six years on getting the mayor of Glen Park needed a sidewalk that ran next to our placement area between Jacinto City and Glen Park. They got a school on the Glen Park side that kids in Jacinto City go to. They needed a sidewalk to get them off the street because they had somebody got hit on a bicycle. So
we approved
with
that.
The county. We finally got everybody lined up, got a sidewalk in. What this is lights along that sidewalk so they can go back and forth at night.
Have no problem
so
with it.
So it doesn't have, it's not a park, it's a sidewalk, and this is lighting for that sidewalk.
So it gets them to the park, but it's not an official park.
Right, yeah, it gets them to, yeah, I mean, there is a park on the south end, there's a baseball field, as I recall, but this is
primarily
access.
Yeah. Okay, so, and it runs in our spoiler area.
So we understand what we're voting on. We're voting on that this $145,000 will not come out of the $1 million park money, and we'll send that $1 million park money discussion back to the committee to discuss what goes in and what goes out. Okay?
As long as they spend on the park. That's what it was for, and it's in East Harris County.
Well, we'll sort that out. I'm saying the committee, we need to make sure that the Community Relations Committee agrees on what should be in, what should be out of that park money. And then that will, but we'll approve this and then you move it forward because we're going to put the lights there. And then the committee is going to decide exactly what goes in and goes out. And you're going to have the debate about whether lights are good or bad or parks or not in that committee meeting. But at this point, what we're doing is simply saying, We're going to approve the $145,000 and not take it out of the park money.
At this time, we're going to let them get together to decide where it should come out.
You're on that part. That's
one vote.
That's true.
Good morning. I'm on the parking meeting as well, so I'm just on mute. But if y'all need anything.
Who is this? Yeah, so I think it's a valid point. That you fundamentally believe it's not a park, and I get that, and we need to have a broader discussion about what park money should go to.
See, we had that discussion in a meeting, and that came up, and I told them at that time that was not a park.
Gotcha. Well, that's new to I think the commissioners,
so
new to me.
Back with it.
That's new to the commissioners and new to me.
Okay.
So we're going to have that meeting.
I'll take the blame because we were under a different understanding if that's what direction we were going with that committee. But we'll take it back to that committee and sort it out.
Right.
But in the meantime,
my recollection is that Toledo Park was part of that billion of the discussion.
Well, they were parks. East Harris County, they're in East Harris County.
Okay, so we're going to close the debate on this. We're not taking it out of the million. You're going to have another conversation.
So Roger says he's going to take care of it, so I'll go along.
Okay, so we're going to reconvene the committee.
And we have a meeting set up for in March.
Well, whatever we do, let's fix that place, because those people that wait like they'll fix that.
We're not against the program.
But it's not coming out of the million.
Right.
Okay. All right, so we do have a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, good. All right, the next item is...
Chairman, do we need to vote on the amendment to the motion?
I already amended the motion. It was second. We already amended it. Assuming that Eric is correct, that I already amended it properly.
Yes. He's going to have fun. He's going to have fun writing up these minutes.
Okay. So this item, Eric, you want to describe what we're doing?
We're going into a hearing that's required by the board.
Do we have to adjourn the Sport Commission meeting?
I think we'll
just go dual
meeting. Adjourned.
Perfect. Okay, go ahead.
And so we're deemed adjourned, and we're having this hearing. The Water Code requires a hearing and notice to our employees when we're making benefit plan changes. So that's what we're doing. And what we did a few years ago was we wrapped up our OPEB, you know, the other retirement benefits, and also our life plans into what we call a wrap plan, just to give it some organization and to make sure it wasn't a year-to-year kind of a thing and it had long-term, you know, existence. So that's what we're talking about right now, those wrap plans. And so we've all heard of COVID. COVID required that certain deadlines for doing things, the federal government required that because of COVID, some of those deadlines be postponed. So, for example, if you had to opt for COBRA coverage, that deadline was postponed. We actually, because the feds required that, we went ahead and did it. Now we're actually going back and formally amending those plans. So that's really what this is all today and is today. We also have some HIPAA things that we told as well. So really, that's all we're doing today. And so if there
technical are adjustments to the plan that required a hearing.
Exactly correct.
Okay, so hearing's open.
Hearing's open. Any questions?
Any questions or comments from people in our hearing?
Move to amend. I think you got to conclude the hearing first.
Yes, we'll close the hearing.
Hearing is formally closed. And so now do we have a motion on item L2?
So moved.
Public employees.
Okay, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Done. Okay, we have nothing in security and emergency operations. It's just sad because I would like to hear from Marcus. There he is. Everything's good, huh?
Yes, sir. Everything's good. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, nothing in technology as well, so we're going to go ahead and recess the open meeting and convene an executive session.
Okay, I'm going to report this is what you desire in Harris County, Texas, for convening a closed meeting. As produced by the State Texas Meeting Back and Government Code to conduct the private consultation with attorneys, including consultation regarding Port Authority v. Louis Drivers Company, the Southern District of Texas, by the federal commercial internet offering, the Port Authority New State Retirement Plan, and Andrew Myers, D.C., and deliberate regarding real estate, including licensing of miscellaneous Houston Ship Channel upland properties, economic development negotiations with defendants, and evaluation of public employees and officers, including deliberation regarding employment agreement, executive director of the Port Authority, and security related matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting.
Back to you, so why don't we start with Commissioner Clunan? Do you have a motion?
I move to authorize the Port Authority to amend the agreement for legal services with Andrews Myers, P.C. on the terms discussed in executive session and to authorize the Chief Legal Officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Okay, any questions, comments? All prepared to say aye?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Commissioner Crusoe?
I move to authorize the Port Authority to take action regarding the Port Authority versus Louis Dreyfus Company, Houston Export Elevator, LLC, on the terms discussed in executive session, and to authorize the executive director to do any and all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Okay, any other questions or comments? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Commissioner Fitzgerald.
I move that the Port Authority take action regarding its employment agreement with Roger Guther on the terms discussed in executive session and authorize the chairman and chief legal officer to do any and all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Okay, any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, ayes have it. All right, I think that's the end of our business for today, so I'll make a motion to adjourn. I think our next meeting is March the 21st. On Monday,
on Monday,
yeah.
Okay.
We're adjourned.